ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Build them as easily as a child breaks dolls. This is Uddhava speaking to Vidura upon the request of Vidura for news about the Yadus. Uddhava is in trance and he's expressing the pastimes of Krishna in deep remembrance and feelings of separation. Purport. The atheist Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna just after his birth. He failed to do so, but later on he got information that Krishna was living in Vrindavan at the house of Nanda Maharaj. He therefore engaged many wizards who could perform wonderful acts and assume any form they liked. All of them appeared before the child Lord in various forms, like Aga, Baka, Putana, Shakata, Trinavarta, and Denuka. And they tried to kill the Lord at every opportunity. But one after another, all of them were killed by the Lord, as if he were only playing with dolls. Children play with toy lions, elephants, boars, and many similar dolls which are broken by the children in the course of their playing with them. Before the Almighty Lord, any powerful living being is just like a toy lion in the hands of a playing child. No one can excel God in any capacity, and therefore no one can be equal to or greater than him, nor can anyone attain the stage of equality with God by any kind of endeavor. Jnana, yoga, and bhakti are three recognized processes of spiritual realization. The perfection of such processes can lead one to the desired goal of life in spiritual value. But that does not mean that one can attain a perfection equal to the Lord's by such endeavors. The Lord is the Lord at every stage. When he was playing just like a child on the lap of his mother, Yashoda Mayi, or just like a cowherd boy with his transcendental friends, he continued to remain God without the slightest diminution of his six opulences. Thus, he is always unrivaled. 31. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of the Yamuna was poisoned by the chief of the reptiles, Kalia. The Lord chastised the snake king within the water and drove him away. And after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and proved that the water was again in its natural state. The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Maharaj Nanda for worship of the cows, and also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the King of Heaven. Thus he advised his father to perform worship of the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of learned brahmanas. Purport. Since he is the teacher of everyone, the Lord also taught his father, Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was a well-to-do landholder and owner of many cows. And as was the custom, he used to perform yearly worship of Indra, the King of Heaven, with great opulence. This worship of demigods by the general populace is also advised in the Vedic literature, just so people can accept the superior power of the Lord. The demigods are servants of the Lord, deputed to look after the management of various activities of universal affairs. Therefore, it is advised in the Vedic scriptures that one should perform yajñas to appease the demigods. But one who is devoted to the Supreme Lord has no need to appease the demigods. Worship of the demigods by common people is an arrangement for acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, but it is not necessary. Such appeasement is generally recommended for material gains only. As we have already discussed in the second canto of this literature, one who admits the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to worship the secondary demigods. Sometimes, being worshipped and adored by less intelligent living beings, the demigods become puffed up with power and forget the supremacy of the Lord. This happened when Lord Krishna was present in the universe, and thus the Lord wanted to give a lesson to the King of Heaven, Indra. He therefore asked Maharaj Nanda to stop the sacrifice offered to Indra and to use the money properly by performing a ceremony worshipping the cows and the pasturing ground on the hill of Govardhan. By this act, Lord Krishna taught human society, as he is instructed in the Bhagavad Gita also, that one should worship the Supreme Lord by all acts and by all their results. That will bring about the desired success. The Vaishyas are specifically advised to give protection to the cows and their pasturing ground or agricultural land instead of squandering their hard-earned money. That will satisfy the Lord. The perfection of one's occupational duty, whether in the sphere of duty to oneself, one's community, or one's nation, is judged by the degree to which the Lord is satisfied. Text 33. O sober Vidura, King Indra, his honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan, and thus the inhabitants of Braj, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, the Govardhan Hill. 34. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. Purport. Before leaving the land of cows, Vrindavan, the Lord pleased his young girlfriends, the transcendental gopis, in his Rasalila pastimes. Here Uddhava stopped his description of the Lord's activities. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Remembrance of Lord Krishna.
Chapter 3, The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan. Sri Uddhava said, thereafter Lord Krishna went to Mathura city with Sri Baladev, and to please their parents they dragged Kamsa, the leader of public enemies, down from his throne and killed him, pulling him along the ground with great strength. Purport, King Kamsa's death is only briefly described here because such pastimes are vividly and elaborately described in the 10th canto. The Lord proved to be a worthy son of his parents even at the age of 16 years. Both brothers, Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev, went to Mathura from Vrindavan and killed their maternal uncle, who had given so much trouble to their parents, Vasudev and Devaki. Kamsa was a great giant, and Vasudev and Devaki never thought that Krishna and Balaram, Baladev, would be able to kill such a great and strong enemy. When the two brothers attacked Kamsa on the throne, their parents feared that now Kamsa would finally get the opportunity to kill their sons, whom they had hidden for so long in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The parents of the Lord, due to parental affection, felt extreme danger, and they almost fainted. Just to convince them that they had actually killed Kamsa, Krishna and Baladev pulled Kamsa's dead body along the ground to encourage them. The Lord learned all the Vedas with their different branches simply by hearing them once from his teacher, Sandipani Muni, whom he rewarded by bringing back his dead son from the region of Yamaraj, Yamaloka. No one but the Supreme Lord, purport, can become well versed in all branches of the Vedic wisdom simply by hearing once from his teacher. Nor can anyone bring a dead body back to life after the soul has already gone to the region of Yamaraj. But Lord Krishna ventured to the planet of Yamaloka and found the dead son of his teacher and brought him back to his father as a reward for the instructions received. The Lord is constitutionally well versed in all the Vedas, and yet to teach by example that everyone must go to learn the Vedas from an authorized teacher and must satisfy the teacher by service and reward, he himself adopted this system. The Lord offered his services to his teacher, Sandipani Muni, and the Muni, knowing the power of the Lord, asked something which was impossible to be done by anyone else. The teacher asked that his beloved son, who had died, be brought back to him, and the Lord fulfilled the request. The Lord is not, therefore, an ingrate to anyone who renders him some sort of service. The devotees of the Lord, who always engage in his loving service, are never to be disappointed in the progressive march of devotional service. That's really nice. I'm going to read it again.
Please.
The Lord is not, therefore, an ingrate to anyone who renders him some sort of service. The devotees of the Lord, who always engage in his loving service, are never to be disappointed in the progressive march of devotional service. The Lord is not, therefore, an ingrate. Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. But Lord Krishna, stepping over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar. Purport: Princess Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, was actually as attractive as fortune itself, because she was as valuable as gold, both in color and in value. Since the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the property of the Supreme Lord, Rukmini was actually meant for Lord Krishna. But Shishupal was selected as her bridegroom by Rukmini's elder brother, although King Bhishmaka wanted his daughter to be married to Krishna. Rukmini invited Krishna to take her away from the clutches of Shishupal. So when the bridegroom, Shishupal, came there with his party, with the desire to marry Rukmini, Krishna all of a sudden swept her from the scene, stepping over the heads of all the princes there, just as Garuda carried away nectar from the hands of the demons. This incident will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. Text 4. By subduing 7 bulls whose noses were not pierced, the Lord achieved the hand of Princess Nagnajiti, the Parijata tree from heaven, just as an ordinary husband would do. But Indra, the king of heaven, induced by his wives, henpecked as he was, ran after the Lord with full force to fight him. Purport: The Lord once went to the heavenly planet to present an earring to Aditi, the mother of the demigods, and his wife Satyabhama also went there with him. There is a special flowering tree called the Parijata, which grows only in the heavenly planets, and Satyabhama wanted this tree. Just to please his wife, like an ordinary husband, the Lord brought back the tree, and this enraged Vajri, or the controller of the thunderbolt. Indra's wives inspired him to run after the Lord to fight, and Indra, because he was a henpecked husband and also a fool, listened to them and dared to fight with Krishna. He was a fool on this occasion because he forgot that everything belongs to the Lord. There was no fault on the part of the Lord, even though he took away the tree from the heavenly kingdom, because Indra was henpecked, dominated by his beautiful wives like Shachi, he became a fool, just as all persons who are dominated by their wives are generally foolish. Indra thought that Krishna was a henpecked husband who only by the will of his wife Satyabhama took away the property of heaven, and therefore he thought that Krishna could be punished. He forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything and cannot be henpecked. The Lord is fully independent, and by his will only he can have hundreds and thousands of wives like Satyabhama. He was not therefore attached to Satyabhama because she was a beautiful wife, but he was pleased with her devotional service and thus wanted to reciprocate the unalloyed devotional service of his devotee. Just an interesting point in that is that this pastime takes place after Indra was defeated in trying to overcome the residents of Vrindavan with wind and rain. And it's mentioned in the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that after the Govardhan inundation, Indra met Krishna in a secluded place to beg forgiveness. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, obviously, he wasn't completely sincere, because later on he again made a mistake with Krishna and ran after him and tried to fight him in the heavenly planet.
Text 6. Narakasura, the son of Dhritri, the earth, tried to grasp the whole sky, and for this he was killed by the Lord in a fight. His mother then prayed to the Lord. This led to the return of the kingdom to the Lord of Narakasura, to the son of Narakasura, and thus the Lord entered the house of the demon. Purport. It is said in other Puranas that Narakasura was the son of Dhritri, the earth, by the Lord himself. One cannot become good.
The offspring when Lord Varaha picked up the earth, and his contact never goes in vain, so that's when the offspring came. And Mahaprabhu mentions this in the Mahaprakash, because he's talking about how he always defers to his devotees. And he said, if somebody, even my own son, offends the devotees, then I'll kill him. And so he mentions in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that he would kill Narakasura, that he had killed Narakasura because he had become offensive to the devotees.
Sometimes devotees ask, how is it that the son of the Lord could become a demon? And I knew that I had heard this somewhere before, and I couldn't give the reference, so I hesitated to say it by your training. But now I remember. Now,
but you've been hanging out with that Bana again.
That's it.
He also brought Satyabhama along
to kill Narakasura.
To get to go ahead, because he promised that he won't touch him to his mother. But then Satyabhama, who's
same
category, she
said, kill him.
So I said, okay,
all right. Text 7. There in the house of the demon, all the princesses kidnapped by Narakasura at once became alert upon seeing the Lord, the friend of the distressed. They looked upon him with eagerness, joy, and shyness, and offered to be his wives. Purport. Narakasura kidnapped many daughters of great kings and kept them imprisoned in his palace. But when he was killed by the Lord and the Lord entered the house of the demon, all the princesses were enlivened with joy and offered to become his wives, because the Lord is the only friend of the distressed. Unless the Lord accepted them, there would be no chance of their being married, because the demon kidnapped them from their father's custody, and therefore no one would agree to marry them. According to Vedic society, girls are transferred from the custody of the father to the custody of the husband. Since these princesses had already been taken away from the custody of their fathers, it would have been difficult for them to have any husband other than the Lord himself. Text 8. All those princesses were lodged in different apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions, exactly matching each and every princess. He accepted their hand in perfect rituals by its internal potency. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita, the Lord is described as follows in regard to his innumerable plenary expansions: Advaitam, Achutam, Anadam, Anantarupam, Adyam Purana Purusham Nabajovanam Cha Vede Shudurla Bamadurla Bam Atma Bhaktau Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. The Lord Govinda, whom I worship, is the original personality of Godhead. He is non-different from his innumerable plenary expansions, who are all infallible, original, and unlimited, and who have eternal forms. Although he is primeval, the oldest personality, He is always fresh and young. By his internal potency, the Lord can expand himself into various personalities of Swayam Prakash and again into Prabhav and Vaibhav forms. And all of them are non-different from one another. The forms into which the Lord expanded to marry the princesses in different apartments were all slightly different, just to match each and every one of them. They are called Vaibhava Vilas forms of the Lord and are affected by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. That's very interesting. That's a tidbit of information there. Because, you know, sometimes those expansions are compared to the expansions that Krishna expanded himself in order to dance with each and every gopi. But here it's saying that they're different. Each form was a little different to match the different queens. That means that the gopis are higher than the queens, because they got Krishna to come in his original form to each and every one of them. Text 9. Just to expand himself according to his transcendental features, the Lord begot in each and every one of them 10 offspring with exactly his own qualities. Text 10. Kaliyavana, the king of Magadha and Shalva, attacked the... No, that looks like it's... Kaliyavana is not the king of Magadha. Oh, yes it is. No, the king of Magadha is Jarasandha, so it's two different persons. Kaliyavana, the king of Magadha, and Shalva attacked the king of Mathura, but when the city was encircled by their soldiers and the Lord refrained from killing them personally, just to show the power of his own men. Purport. After the death of Kansa, when Mathura was encircled by the soldiers of Kaliyavana, Jarasandha and Shalva, the Lord seemingly fled from the city, and thus he is known as Ranchor, or one who fled from fighting. Actually, the fact was that the Lord wanted to kill them through the agency of his own men, devotees like Muchakunda and Bhima. Kaliyavana and the king of Magadha were killed by Muchakunda and Bhima, respectively, who acted as agents of the Lord. By such acts, the Lord wanted to exhibit the prowess of his devotees, as if he were personally unable to fight, but his devotees could kill them. The relationship of the Lord with his devotees is a very happy one. Actually, the Lord descended at the request of Brahma in order to kill all the undesirables of the world. But to divide the share of glory, he sometimes engaged his devotees to take the credit. The battle of Kurukshetra was designed by the Lord himself, but just to give credit to his devotee Arjuna, Nimitta Matram Bhavasavyashachin, he played the part of the charioteer, while Arjuna was given the chance to play the fighter and thus become the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. What he wants to do himself, by his transcendental plans, he executes through his confidential devotees. That is the way of the Lord's mercy towards his pure, unalloyed devotees.
11. The kings like Shambhara, Dvidvid, Bhada, Mura, Balval, and many other demons, such as Dantavakra, some he killed himself, and some he caused to be killed by others, Sri Baladeva, etc. Then, O Vidura, the Lord caused all the kings, both the enemies and those on the side of your fighting nephews, to be killed in the battle of Kurukshetra. All those kings were so great and strong that the earth seemed to shake as they traversed the war field. Duryodhan was bereft of his fortune and duration of life because of the intricacy of ill advice given by Karna, Dushasana, and Saubala. When he lay on the ground with his followers, his thighs broken. Although he was powerful, the Lord was not happy to see the scene. Mm-hmm. Purport. The fall of Duryodhan, the leading son of Dhritarashtra, was not pleasing to the Lord, although he was on the side of Arjuna, and it was he who advised Bhima how to break the thighs of Duryodhan while the fight was going on. The Lord is constrained to award punishment upon the wrongdoer, but he is not happy to award such punishments because the living entities are originally his parts and parcels. He is harder than the thunderbolt for the wrongdoer and softer than the rose for the faithful, for the forgetful living entities. I find that reassuring that Krishna felt ambivalent. Even though he wanted a certain outcome, he pushed it in that direction, but at the end he wasn't happy about it, even though it had to be done. Because I know I feel like that a lot. When one's given a duty to do, and it's something that one has to do, but one may not feel completely satisfied because of the inevitable outcome. But what can you do? You have to do your duty.
Thankless task.
Thankless task.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, Shami Prashna.
I like how that helps us understand the Lord's character beyond kind of the simplistic ideas of a jealous God.
He's saying that he's appreciating the Lord's character as not being simplistic as presented in other places as just a jealous and envious God who strikes people down and maybe even enjoys it. Affected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Pima. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Yadu dynasty, born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden. Purport, it is a wrong theory that due to increase in population, the world becomes overburdened, and therefore there are wars and other annihilating processes. The earth is never overburdened. The heaviest mountains and oceans on the face of the earth hold more living entities than there are human beings, and they are not overburdened. If a census were taken of all the living beings on the surface of the earth, certainly it would be found that the number of humans is not even 5% of the total number of living beings. If the birth rate of human beings is increasing, then the birth rate of other living beings is increasing proportionately. The birth rate of lower animals, beasts, aquatics, birds, etc., is far greater than that of human beings. There is an adequate arrangement for food for all the living beings all over the earth by the order of the Supreme Lord. And he can arrange more and more if there is actually a disproportionate increase of living beings. Therefore, there is no question of an increase in population causing a burden. The earth became overburdened due to the dharma glani, or irregular discharge of the Lord's desire. The Lord appeared on the earth to curb the increase in miscreants and not the increase in population, as is wrongly put forward by the mundane economist. When Lord Krishna appeared, there had been a sufficient increase in miscreants who had violated the desire of the Lord. The material creation is meant for fulfilling the desire of the Lord, and his desire is that the conditioned souls who are unfit to enter into the kingdom of God have a chance to improve their conditions for entering. The material creation is meant for fulfilling the desire of the Lord, and his desire is that the conditioned souls who are unfit to enter the kingdom of God have a chance to improve their conditions for entering. So it's like when somebody does the service of helping people improve the conditions by which they can go back to the kingdom of God, they're working in accord with Krishna's desire, and therefore they live a blessed life. Just saying. The entire process of cosmic arrangement is intended to give a chance to the conditioned souls to enter the kingdom of God, and there is an adequate arrangement for their maintenance by the nature of the Lord. Therefore, although there may be a great increase in population on the surface of the earth, if the people are exactly in line with God consciousness and are not miscreants, such a burden on the earth is a source of pleasure for her. There are two kinds of burdens. There is the burden of the beast and the burden of love. The burden of the beast is unbearable, but the burden of love is a source of pleasure. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes the burden of love very practically. He says that the burden of the husband on the young wife, the burden of the child on the lap of the mother, and the burden of the wealth of wealth on the businessman, although burdens from the viewpoint of heaviness are sources of pleasure, and in the absence of such burdensome objects, one may feel the burden of separation, which is heavier to bear than the actual burden of love. When Lord Krishna referred to the burden of the Yadu dynasty on the earth, he referred to something different than the burden of the beast. The large numbers of family members born of Lord Krishna counted to some millions and were certainly a great increase in the population of the earth. But because all of them were expansions of the Lord himself by his transcendental plenary expansions, they were a source of great pleasure for the earth. When the Lord referred to them in connection with the burden on the earth, he had in mind their imminent disappearance from the earth. All the members of the family of Lord Krishna were incarnations of different demigods, and they were to disappear from the surface of the earth along with the Lord. When he referred to the unbearable heaviness on the earth in connection with the Yadu dynasty, he was referring to the burden of their separation. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this inference.
What a wonderful purport. Is that a wonderful purport?
Yes. We would like to vote that this is a wonderful purport.
Everybody that thinks this is a wonderful purport, please raise your hands.
Okay. You have to show that. Okay, vote again. Text 15. When they quarrel among themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking, matu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise, it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. Purport: the Lord and his associates appear and disappear by the will of the Lord. They are not subjected to the laws of material nature. No one was able to kill the family of the Lord, nor was there any possibility of their natural death by the laws of nature. The only means, therefore, for their disappearance was to was the make show of a fight amongst themselves, as if brawling in intoxication due to drinking. That so-called fighting would also take place by the will of the Lord, otherwise there would be no cause for their fighting. Just as Arjuna was made to be illusioned by family affection, and thus the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, so the Yadu dynasty was made to be intoxicated by the will of the Lord and nothing more. The devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. Thus, they are transcendental instruments in the hands of the Lord and can be used in any way the Lord desires. The pure devotees also enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see him happy. Devotees of the Lord never assert independent individuality. On the contrary, they utilize their individuality in pursuit of the desires of the Lord, and this cooperation of the devotees with the Lord makes a perfect scene of the Lord's pastimes.
Srila Prabhupada, to Text 16. Lord Sri Krishna, thus thinking to himself, established Maharaj Yudhishthira in the position of supreme control of the world, in order to show the ideal of administration on the path of piety. The embryo of Puru's descendant, begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burnt by the weapon of the son of Drona, but later he was again protected by the Lord. Purport: the embryonic body of Parikshit, which was in formation after Uttara's pregnancy by Abhimanyu, the great hero, was burned by the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, but a second body was given by the Lord within the womb, and thus the descendant of Puru was saved. This incident is the direct proof that the body and the living entity, the spiritual spark, are different. When the living entity takes shelter in the womb of a woman through the injection of the semen of a man, there is an emulsification of the man's and woman's discharges, and thus a body is formed the size of a pea,
gradually developing into a complete body. But if a developing embryo is destroyed in some way or other, the living entity has to take shelter in another body, in the womb of another woman. But if the developing, we got a fact checker here, thank you. The particular living entity, but if the developing embryo is destroyed in some way or other, the living entity has to take shelter in another body, in the womb of another woman. The particular living entity who was selected to be the descendant of Maharaj Puru, or the Pandavas, was not an ordinary living entity, and by the superior will of the Lord, he was destined to become the successor to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Therefore, when Ashwatthama destroyed the embryo of Maharaj Parikshit, the Lord, by his own internal potency, entered into the womb of Uttara by his plenary portion, just to give audience to the would-be Maharaj Parikshit, who was in great danger. By his appearance within the womb, the Lord encouraged the child and gave him complete protection in a new body by his omnipotency. By his power of omnipresence, he was present both inside and outside of Uttara and other members of the Pandava family. Text 18. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform 3 horse sacrifices, and Maharaj Yudhishthira, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth assisted by his younger brothers. Purport. Maharaj Yudhishthira was the ideal monarchical representative on the earth because he was a constant follower of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. As stated in the Vedas, Ishupanishad, the Lord is the proprietor of the entire manifested cosmic creation, which presents a chance for the conditioned souls to revive their eternal relationship with the Lord and thus go back to Godhead, back home. The whole system of the material world is arranged with that program in mind and plan. Anyone who violates the plan is punished by the law of nature, which is acting by the direction of the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Yudhishthira was installed on the throne of the earth as a representative of the Lord. The king is always expected to be the representative of the Lord. Perfect monarchy necessitates representation of the supreme will of the Lord, and Maharaj Yudhishthira was the ideal monarch on this supreme principle. Both the king and the subjects were happy in the discharge of worldly duties, and thus protection of the citizens and enjoyment of the natural life with full cooperation of material nature followed in the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira and his worthy descendants, like Maharaj Parikshit. Text 19. Simultaneously, the personality of Godhead enjoyed life in the city of Dwarka, strictly in conformity with the Vedic customs of society. He was situated in detachment and knowledge, as enunciated by the Sankhya system of philosophy. Purport. While Maharaj Yudhishthira was the emperor of the earth, Lord Sri Krishna was the king of Dwarka and was known as Dwarkadish. Like other subordinate kings, he was under the regime of Maharaj Yudhishthira. Although Lord Sri Krishna is the supreme emperor of the entire creation, while he was on this earth, he never violated the principles of the Vedic injunctions because they are the guide for human life. Regulated human life according to the Vedic principles, which are based on a system of knowledge called Sankhya philosophy, is the way of enjoyment of the necessities of life. Without such knowledge, detachment, and custom, the so-called human civilization is no more than an animal society of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. The Lord was acting freely, as he willed, yet by his practical example he taught not to lead a life which goes against the principles of detachment and knowledge. Attainment of knowledge and detachment, as very elaborately discussed in Sankhya philosophy, is the real perfection of life.
Knowledge means to know that the mission of the human form of life is to end all the miseries of material existence, and that in spite of having to live the bodily, and in spite of having to fulfill the bodily necessities in a regulated way, one must be detached from such animal life. Fulfilling the demands of the body is animal life, and fulfilling the mission of the spirit soul is the human mission. Text 20. He was there in his transcendental body, the residence of the goddess of fortune, with his usual gentle and sweetly smiling face, his nectarian words and his flawless character. Purport. In the previous verse it is described that Lord Krishna, being situated in the truths of Sankhya philosophy, is detached from all kinds of matter. In the present verse it is described that he is the residence of the goddess of fortune. These two things are not at all contradictory. Lord Krishna is detached from the variegatedness of the inferior nature, but he is in eternal blissful enjoyment of the spiritual nature, or his internal nature. One who has a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand this distinction between the external and internal potencies. In Bhagavad Gita, the internal potency is described as the para prakriti. In the Vishnu Purana also, the internal potency of Vishnu is described as para shakti. The Lord is never detached from the association of para shakti. This para shakti and her manifestations are described in the Brahma Samhita as ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavitabhihi. The Lord is eternally joyful and cognizant in the taste derived from the from such transcendental bliss. Negation of the variegatedness of the inferior energy does not necessitate negation of the positive, transcendental bliss of the spiritual world. Therefore, the Lord's gentleness, his smile, his character, and everything related to him are all transcendental. Such manifestations of the internal potency are the reality, of which the material shadow is only a temporary representation from which everyone with proper knowledge must be detached.
And that brings us to the Gayatri break. We'll be back in 10 minutes.
The point is that all the holy places are contained within Vrindavan. So if a person is actually realized about that, then there's no need for him to go to another place as an act of pilgrimage. Sometimes Prabhupada would chide those who are living on the bank of the Ganga in Calcutta, for instance, and they would go to a place far away to take the bath in the Ganga, pointing out that going to a place of pilgrimage is not just for bathing in the Ganga, but it's for finding holy men and holy persons who can speak Harikatha, and that's the purpose of going to the holy place. But the tendency is for materialistic devotees to go there for other reasons, and as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport itself, for those persons it's necessary for
devotees of Lord Chaitanya might go to these other places and see Lord Chaitanya's route that he took and visit the temples and remember the places. It's like also in Montreal, Canada, the devotees took me to the Notre Dame Cathedral, and we went inside. Of course, it's an awesome place, but when we went inside, we sat there in the pews and we read the conversation that Prabhupada had when he was inside there, and we felt communion, and it was worth going to that place. And we also visited the house that he used to live in. We knocked on the door, and the people said, they saw that we were devotees, and they go, "Okay, come on in." It happened so many times.
They were used to it.
Yeah, they're actually very accommodating and felt kind of thrilled that they were living in the house of that was so important to the devotees. So they showed us around. So it's like this principle of appreciating how everything is in Vrindavan, and Mahaprabhu's principle where he says, Arajo Bhagavan Vrajeshatanayas Taddhama Vrindavana, that Vrindavan and Krishna are no different. but at the same time, you know, going to other places for the right reasons, preaching, or because one's worshiping, seeing Vrindavan there and Lord Chaitanya and Krishna and these other places. I think going to other places of pilgrimage with the idea that one's going to do, that you get special benedictions from other places, and therefore, you know, you have to go to all these places in order to achieve them. Okay. Some people do that. There's 108 pilgrimage places in India. Some people try to go to every single one of them. I'm sorry?
Divyadeshas,
yeah. There's maps you can get and go all these different places. And that, you know, can all be attained by the devotees in Vrindavan.
I think that the point that Prabhupada was making in the purport was that there are different levels of devotional service, and depending on the level of devotional service what one is on, that will determine the reason he's going. So he's saying that there are levels of devotees who, you know, will go for reasons that you said, you know, to follow the Acharya, just by going to the places of pilgrimage of Lord Chaitanya, for instance, as an example. But some just go as a social function, just as a...
Yeah, social or ritualistic or karmakanda, that can be there too. Also, it just reminded me of what you were saying in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, Tirtaspadam Shiva Varinchi Nutam Sharanyam Vrityartiham Pranatapava Pababdipotam. In the commentaries to this, those two verses, Karabhajana Muni gives about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that it's possible that there are people that won't be able to go to the Holy Dham, and that, you know, it's not possible for everybody to travel all over the earth.
He said
it's not even necessary if you worship Lord Chaitanya, because his lotus feet are the repository of all the holy places.
That's right.
So he says specifically, if you bow down to Lord Chaitanya and serve him, then you get the result of going to all the holy places.
What happened was almost everybody went there, except for just a few of Bhaktivedanta's intimate followers and associates, and Srila Prabhupada stayed. And then later on, when Srila Prabhupada got initiation, when Bhaktisiddhanta pointed him out, he said, "Oh yes, I will get him initiation. I remember he likes to hear." So hearing from him, and doesn't go away, yeah. So that's the example, put perfectly.
Davina?
Some of Mahaprabhu's internal associates who were from Navadvipa, they never went to Vrindavan.
Yeah.
Prabhupada points that out in a
Balaram went on pilgrimage because he killed Ramaharsha and Sutta, and the sages said, "We know that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you had to do this and it was perfect in all respects, but I think that you have to do something to atone for that." So he said, "I'll do whatever you want, I'll bring him back to life and I'll, you know, change everything back to the way it was before," because he had that power. But they said, no, what you ever did had to be done, but at least you can go to the places of pilgrimage.
You had to kill Bal Bal also, right?
And Bal Bal, yeah. The Brahmanas, this is text 27. The Brahmanas were not only given well-fed cows and charity, but also gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skin seats, blankets, horses, elephants, girls, and sufficient land for maintenance. Purport. All these charities were meant for the Brahmanas, whose lives were devoted entirely to the welfare of society, both spiritually and materially. The Brahmanas were not giving their services as paid servants, but the society provided them with all necessities. It was arranged for some of the Brahmanas, who were in difficulty for marriage, to be given girls. The Brahmanas therefore had no economic problems. the Kshatriya kings and rich mercantile men would provide them with all that they needed. And in exchange, the Brahmanas were completely devoted to the elevation of society. That was the way thereafter, they offered the Brahmanas highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. They lived perfectly by protecting the cows and the Brahmanas. Purport. The behavior exhibited by the descendants of Yadu in the pilgrimage site of Prabhas was highly cultured and exactly to the point of human perfection. The perfection of human life is attained by following three principles of civilization. Without this aim, any amount of material advancement and so-called comforts can only bring the defeat of the human form of life. Brahmanas and Vaishnavas do not accept any foodstuff which is not first offered to the personality of Godhead. Foodstuff offered to the Lord is accepted by the devotees as the mercy of the Lord. After all, the Lord supplies all kinds of foodstuff, both to the human being and to other animals. A human being must be conscious of the fact that all foodstuffs, namely grains, vegetables, milk, water, and so on, the prime necessities of life, are supplied for mankind by the Lord, and such foodstuffs cannot be manufactured by any scientist or materialist in a laboratory or factory established by human effort. The intelligent class of men are called Brahmanas, and those who have realized the absolute truth in his supreme personal feature are called Vaishnavas. But both of them accept foodstuffs which are the remnants of sacrifice. Sacrifice is ultimately meant to satisfy the Yajna Purusha, Vishnu. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, in Bhagavad Gita 3.13, it is said that one who accepts foodstuffs as the remnants of sacrifice is freed from all sinful reactions, and one who cooks foodstuffs for maintenance of his body takes in all kinds of sins, which lead only to suffering. The foodstuffs prepared by the Yadus at the Prabhas pilgrimage site in order to offer to the bona fide Brahmanas there. I'll read that again. The foodstuffs prepared by the Yadus at the Prabhas pilgrimage site to offer to the bona fide Brahmanas there were all offered to the personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The Yadus offered their sincere obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. The Yadus, or any enlightened family in Vedic culture, are trained for attainment of human perfection by total cooperation of service between the different divisions of social orders. The word udurasam is also significant here. Hundreds of delicacies can be prepared simply by the combination of grains, vegetables, and milk. All such preparations are in the mode of goodness, and therefore may be offered to the personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.26, the Lord accepts only foodstuffs which are within the range of fruits, flowers, leaves, and liquids, provided they are offered in complete devotional service. Devotional service is the only criterion for a bona fide offering to the Lord. The Lord assures that he positively eats such foodstuffs offered by the devotees. So, judging from all sides, the Yadus were perfectly trained, civilized persons, and their being cursed by the Brahmana sages were only by the desire of the Lord. The whole incident was a warning to all concerned that no one should behave lightly with the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Lord's Pastimes Out of Vrindavan.
Chapter 4, Vidura approaches Maitreya. Thereafter, all of them, the descendants of Vrishni and Bhoja, being permitted by the Brahmanas, partook of the remnants of prasad and also drank liquor made of rice. By drinking, they all became delirious, and bereft of knowledge, they touched the cores of each other's hearts with harsh words. Purport: in ceremonies, when Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are sumptuously fed, the host partakes of the remnants of foodstuff after the guest has given permission. So the descendants of Vrishni and Bhoja formally took permission from the Brahmanas and ate the prepared foodstuff. Kshatriyas are permitted to drink at certain occasions, so they all drank a kind of light liquor made of rice. By such drinking, they became delirious and bereft of sense, so much so that they forgot their relationship with one another and used harsh words which touched the cores of each other's hearts. Drinking is so harmful that even deep in the forest due to human effort, so also there was no power in the universe which could vanquish the descendants of Yadu, who were protected by the Lord. The Lord wanted them to be so destroyed, and thus they obeyed his order as indicated by the word Tad Anugyata. Text number 3. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, after foreseeing the end of his family by his internal potency, went to the bank of the river Saraswati, sipped water, and sat down underneath a tree. Purport: all the above-mentioned activities of the Yadus and Bhojas were executed by the internal potency of the Lord. Pious activities and took food and drink to their heart's content. It was then arranged for them to be sent back to their abodes so that others could see that the powerful Yadu dynasty was no longer in the world. In the previous verse, the word Anugyata, indicating that the whole sequence of events was arranged by the Lord, is significant. These particular pastimes of the Lord are not a manifestation of his external energy or material nature. Such an exhibition of his internal potency is eternal, and therefore one should not conclude that the Yadus and Bhojas died in a drunken state in an ordinary fratricidal war. Sri Jiva Goswami, proceed to Bhadrikashram because there he could associate with the devotees of Nar Narayan, and in their association of devotional service he could increase his eagerness for chanting, hearing, knowledge, and detachment. 5. Yet in spite of my knowing his desire to destroy the dynasty, O Arindama Vidura, I followed him because it was impossible for me to bear separation from the lotus feet of my master.
Text 6. Thus following, I saw my patron and master, Lord Sri Krishna, sitting alone and deeply thinking, taking shelter on the bank of the river Saraswati, although he is the shelter of the goddess of fortune. Purport: those who are in the renounced order of life often take shelter underneath a tree. The Lord was found by Uddhava in that condition of taking shelter, as do persons who have no shelter. Because he is the proprietor of everything, comforts, he looked quite cheerful in that posture. Purport: according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord's sitting posture, keeping his back against the newly grown banyan tree, is also meaningful. Ashwata, the banyan tree, is so called because the tree does not die very quickly. It continues to live for many, many years. His legs and their energy reached the place where Lord Sri Krishna was resting. To meet the Lord is not an ordinary incident. Maitreya was a great sage and a learned scholar philosopher, but not a pure devotee of the Lord. And therefore, his meeting with the Lord at that time may have been due to agyata, sukriti, or some unknown devotional service. Pure devotees always engage in pure devotional activities, and therefore their meeting with the Lord is natural. But when those who are not up to that standard meet the Lord, it is due to the unforeseen fortune of accidental devotional. A jnana bhakta, or one whose devotion is mixed with a monistic viewpoint, is not a pure devotee. Although Maitreya was a devotee, his devotion was mixed. The Lord reciprocates with his devotees on the basis of transcendental love and not on the basis of philosophical knowledge or fruitive activities. In the transcendental loving service of the Lord, there is no place for monistic knowledge or fruitive activities. The gopis in Vrindavan were neither highly learned scholars nor mystic yogis. They had spontaneous love for the Lord, and thus he became their heart and soul, and the gopis also became the heart and soul of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya approved the relationship of the gopis with the Lord as supreme. Herein, the Lord's attitude towards Uddhava was more intimate than with Maitreya Muni.
And that brings us to the end of the morning session of the reading of the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Are there any comments before we go? We have 2 minutes. Just thought, it's such a nectarian session.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, because of agyata sukriti, if someone gets some benefit by the association of pure devotees somewhere, he gets what's called bhakti unmukhi sukriti, which gives them the opportunity for more association in the future. That's mentioned in the Nectar Devotion. Rupa Goswami says, if somebody takes to devotional service in this life, it means that they've already contacted devotional service in the last life. It's a continuum. So, just, it's pretty straightforward what the purport says.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.